During seminary, I worked on a project that was aimed at reducing gang violence. Our small team interviewed gang members in order to develop relationships with them and also to get some clear information on what was going on in their lives in the neighborhoods of the South Side of Chicago. The two gangs, the Latin Kings and the Two Sixes, were completely divided in the neighborhoods, opposed to one another in almost all ways imaginable. Because of the turf wars, the options for where we could meet to interview them were very specific, very limited. One gang could meet at the Burger King, and one gang could meet at the McDonald's, and it was big consequences if you messed up and got confused, because it was dangerous business for everybody involved. You know this story in so many neighborhoods in America, and I got to know some young guys who lived in wheelchairs because of the unfortunate tragedy, the tragedy of their lives, that a flying bullet hit them in the spine when they went to the wrong place at the wrong time. A year and a half later, I served as a chaplain with some of the very same gangs in Cook County Jail in Chicago, 26th in California. In that ministry, our Bible study had a few favorite verses that we went to time and time again because they really resonated with the guys in the context of their lives. And one of the verses is 1 Corinthians chapter 12. The Apostle Paul writes to the people of Corinth and warns them against factionalism. He talks about all the people as the body of Christ. And I really believe that for we Unitarian Universalists, we can interpret this as all people as the body of the human family. And in the letter, Paul says that one body of people includes Jews, Greeks, slaves, and free folks. This was radical inclusivity given the historic context. And in those Bible studies with the gang members who had been involved in these tough, violent worlds, these guys deeply appreciated the spiritual message of all human beings being part of one body. I remember to this day reading their body language time and time again. They would exhibit relief and being energized by the idea of breaking down hurtful walls of separation in their lives. I think you don't have to be involved or consider such difficult circumstances as gang wars to get a sense of how people struggle in our society with feeling disconnected from one another. Compiling decades of studies shows that Americans are at an all-time low in terms of how many true friends we have. The American Sociological Review found that in 1985, Americans named an average of 3 close friends, and in 2004, the number went down to 2. And talking about that many, this is tens of millions of people responding to studies. 20-year span to go down by that high of a percentage is drastic. In 2004, in that large study, 1 in 4 people had no confidants at all. 25% of Americans had not one close friend. That is tough, sad reality. Keep in mind, this is in the same context where Facebook is growing. $68 billion American-based global giant has grown to include now over 1 billion users, 1 billion friends. So our nation is headquarters for the biggest friend-making company in the world, and we are losing our true friendships. We have to pay attention. The challenge of spiritual disconnectedness, my friend Scott in Rochester at that church talks about spiritual disconnectedness as the problem of our times. I think so many of us experience it in different ways. It flies in the face of what many researchers and spiritual leaders claim to be the ultimate reality of our lives, meaning the capital T truth of how we really are. Smart people like David Brooks are not alone. More and more scientists, anthropologists, psychologists, and religious leaders say that our reality is connectedness. We are one. But believing in and feeling disconnected is akin to what the Buddhists call illusion. For Buddhists, and this is what Jody's talking about with the kids right now, everything is one, one. But many of us tend to believe that that's not true. I think if you say, I have no friends, maybe that's your truth, but it's also you're saying, I'm alone. That we're separate, individual, isolated beings. And it comes in so many different shapes and forms of how we think and talk and act. David Brooks is a tremendously astute reporter and writer. In this book, The Social Animal, he engaged in years of study and reading and writing that led him to believe that we are spiritual grand central stations, each and every one of us. We are junctions, listen to this, millions of sensations, emotions, and signals interpenetrate every second. That's hard to wrap, we can't really even wrap our mind around what it means, but a lot of researchers are saying they believe it's true. Brooks writes, we become fully ourselves, only through the ever-richening interplay of our own networks with networks of others. I become more fully me when I'm interacting with you. We seek more than anything else, he says, to establish deeper and more complete connections. And through our own experiences, we know that the connections at times are pretty darn complete. Douglas and Carol were a married couple, very much in love. They'd throw dinner parties, and then afterwards they wash the dishes together and talk about what everybody said and how the group got along or didn't. And then deep hardship struck their lives. When their kids were 5 and 2, Carol was diagnosed with a brain tumor, which she did not survive. She died. After Carol died, Douglas described his experience of being with the body of his deceased beloved. He said, I looked in her face so deeply that I felt I was behind her eyes. And all at once I found myself saying, as tears flowed, that is me. That is me. And those simple words brought back many thoughts that I had had before about the fusion of our souls into one higher level entity, that we shared identical hopes about our children. I realized that though Carol had died, that core piece of her had not died at all, but that it had lived on very determinedly in my brain. Now, when I hear that, it really makes me think of Emerson, middle 1800s Unitarian philosopher, talked about the oversoul. He believed everyone had a soul, but the souls were not isolated, separated beings. They were all connected in one oversoul. Any of us who have been fortunate enough to see a newborn baby placed on the bare chest of the mother who just gave birth. She's carried this child for something like 9 months in her womb, and now they're touching skin to skin. That connection is indescribable to the witness, let alone to the mother and the child. We know so many studies about the importance of touch and babies. Babies whose mommies were addicted to crack during the pregnancy. One of the most important factors to help the baby get to health is touch. Hold the baby. Connect with the baby. And many of us, you know what? That's what we all need. Touch, connection. I know a number of people who say very convincingly that they knew on the first date that would be the partnership for the rest of their lives, and they were correct. I knew on the first time. A lot of people say it. Now these are sacred turning point moments. The death of a lifetime partner, the birth time with a mommy and a baby together, a couple figuring out they're going to be together forever. Those really illuminate what Brooks is talking about with millions of signals going back and forth. But here's what I say. Ultimately, those big moments are not that unique. And at least they do not have to be. When we find ways beyond only acting as Rodin's thinker, we are Unitarians from the Enlightenment. We got the rational going real strong. It's an asset. It's an asset, that part of the brain. But when we get out of that being the dominant part of how we are, and we are doing this. I know a lot of you have been doing this for years and decades. Connect more fully with our entire body, mind, and soul. Special things happen. Brooke says, outer mind highlights the power of the individual. The inner mind highlights the power of relationships and invisible bonds between people. Outer mind highlights hungers for status, money, applause. Inner mind hungers for harmony and connection. Those moments of self-consciousness can fade away more, and a person becomes more lost in a challenge, lost in a cause. The love of another, the love of God. So here's the place where my Unitarian Universalist faith takes over, and I hope yours does too, because I believe with all of my heart that we can experience awareness of these deeper, indescribable connections on a regular basis. Everyday awakenings and miracles can happen, where every day, in some way, we can get lost in a challenge, a cause, the love of another, the love of God. That being said, I'm not saying it's easy. It ain't. It ain't easy. For most of us, it is not uncommon to feel closed off from others or to feel closed down from ourselves. It happens. We feel lonely and lost sometimes. We can be surrounded by people in the most beautiful setting in the world, people we love, and feel sealed off in a bubble. I have a lot of experiences where I felt like the bubble boy from the Seinfeld episodes. A very difficult period of my life. I was in Costa Rica with my parents and my sister. I was really struggling. Playa Manuel Antonio, my mother and I were feeding bananas by hand to monkeys in the wild. It was a beautiful vacation, but nothing was going back and forth. My Grand Central Station was like closed down for business. Nothing going back and forth. Awakening is the spiritual theme of the month, and it can take effort to fully live into ways of connecting and uncovering these hidden sources of love, courage, and hope. So we practice. That's what we do in the living of our lives. I offer two spiritual practices for you today, for this week. Spiritual practice number one, spend time with someone you care about. Could be 15 minutes. Unplug, connect, talk, or just sit on a bench and watch the beautiful Philadelphia spring. Just connect, be with that person. Spiritual practice number two, keep a journal of when you feel more connected and alive. Do this for maybe a week or so, and then go back and review those times and see if you can identify any patterns of what might be facilitating your connectivity or blocking it, shutting it down. I hope that everybody can be discerning ways that are good for us to connect with ourselves, connect with others, connect with Mother Nature. Don't be this, don't be the village chief telling everyone to go off with their sticks and get rid of the frogs. Be careful. That's you know, not many of us are acting exactly like that village chief, but there's a lot of ways to think you're disconnected, and some of them are very deceptive. I think Facebook addiction is one of them. I know some people who are living Facebook and not feeling too happy. So now that I know a lot of people who dig Facebook, I'm not a weird antisocial guy. Facebook's fine. But just keep track of what's working for you or what's shutting you down. Now, personally, I am old school. I think friends have to get together in person with friends to actually be friends. So you do it how you want to do it. Annie Lamont tells a great story of friends. She has a couple of buddies who are very involved in the Special Olympics, and one year she ended up watching a lot of basketball games in the tournament, and she was astounded. Everything happened very slowly, loudly, and joyfully. And one guy was sort of the leader of both teams. He dribbled a lot. Everybody passed him the ball, including people on the other team. And at the end of one game, he got the ball at one end and dribbled real slowly down the court. Everyone just kind of let him go. It was like kind of understood to be the finale. And he threw it up, it plopped down through the net, and everybody involved just cheered. And it just felt magic. And she showed, she talked to him in the stands afterward. He showed her picture of himself and two other of his buddies who he plays with who were just on the court and said, he said, those are cool guys. Our deepest calling often involves a quest for personal participation in the organic community of all. And our capacity for knowledge or creativity often goes up or down depending on our connectivity. Michael Bloomberg, New York mayor, his mayor's office and Bloomberg Inc. have open work areas. I don't really get how they do this, but there's something to it. I don't know how they have private conversations. But they don't have cubicles, they don't have walls, they don't have doors. They all interact in their work. And they say productivity and satisfaction go up. Every Sunday morning, we gather right here in this room to celebrate life. Now, I want us to be going to use more technology in our worship in the coming years, but we're going to get together in person forever. This is what we do as human beings. We get together to look into each other's ever so human faces and hear each other breathe. James Fowler studies stages of faith, looks at all the world's traditions, and he identifies the most advanced stage of faith is number 6, universalizing faith. People all around the world can be activist type of faith, and they are. And those people, he says, create zones of liberation from social, political, economic, and ideological shackles that we place on our own human experiences. This faith allows people to feel that they are participants in a power that unifies and transforms the world. For the last 2 weeks, we've had people working hard in rebuilding together Philadelphia, thanks to the leaders who worked so hard to make that happen. We've had almost 20 volunteers in North Philadelphia, 5600 Marvine Street. We were in a cohort of a bunch of people working on 9 homes. Magic happening in this neighborhood that has too many problems. I was fortunate enough yesterday to be a couple hours in Miss Barnett's home. And she said to one of the volunteers I was working with, everybody coming together on this block to do this all makes me know that there is a God. That's what she said. I said, I agree. And I can use other words too. Makes me know the spirit of life is alive and gracious and abundant. Miracles abound. Getting together to serve needs greater than our own makes me know love is the most powerful force in the universe, for sure. People connecting to celebrate life helps me know I'm the nose, You can be the eyes, you could be a hand, doesn't really matter how we think about it, but we are all connected as one body of the human family with great spirit. Blessings be. Amen. Let's join together now.